Good afternoon, good evening, and good night. And welcome to This is Revolution Podcast, to the viewing audience across the pond. I am your host, Pascal Robert, here for another episode of This is Revolution. If you are new to the channel, thank you so much for joining us as this lovely Monday evening, Thursday evening, I should say. If you're a returning subscriber, welcome back. So glad to have you here with us. As for all of us, TRI, I would like to send a big thanks to you, to the subscribers on all platforms and patrons. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do this. For those who do not know, this is our Thursday show. Jason is away for the day, relaxing, because he's so hard producing these episodes. There was no bonus champagne room tonight because we have our movie night tomorrow. And we're basically going to be continuing with our episode. Today, we're going to be talking about a very important and important subject to This is Revolution Podcast, because we have two of our team and our crew that are members who are from this particular area of the land. Haiti, once again, is in a crisis. The current situation in Haiti is in that the temporarily selected Prime Minister Ariel Henry is unable to govern. He's been asked to resign by even people in the West. There are no resident signs of when elections are being held in the country. And the country is very much, collapsing day to day as we speak. People are wondering what exactly is going on and what can be done to change the situation and how exactly we got here. In order to do that, we have friend of show, Dr. Paul McComb, longtime scholar and academic professor at West Virginia University and Florida Memorial College. Please welcome Dr. Paul McComb.
Hey, brother. Long time no see, man. It's been a while. Thanks for having me back, man.
It's been a while. Paul Howard, thank you for coming back on to talk about this very, 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 very crisis situation. So, Paul, listen, we've had you on to talk about crises in Haiti on a couple of situations in the past. Oh, by the way, we cannot forget our other Haitian-American member as well. MC Toussaint is here as well with us. Toussaint, come aboard.
Hello, hello. It's going to be a good show.
Yes. So, to start back, put the current manifestation of what's going on in Haiti in the atmosphere of the assassination of Jovenel Moïse. How do we get from Jovenel Moïse to this particular point? Jovenel Moïse's assassination to this point.
Well, the attempt is to contextualize the power players on the island, as well as to contextualize what's going on in Haiti with the larger geopolitical processes that are taking place, whether it's in Ukraine as well as Palestine. Post the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, Dr. Ariel Henry was appointed or selected by the West as prime minister or interim prime minister of the island. And he was put in place by the American State Department in the core group, which includes France, Canada, the US, and Great Britain as a side partner. And the intent behind appointing Ariel Henry was twofold. One was to continue the privatization of all the state assets beginning that Matéli began after the earthquake, the privatization of the ports, the privatization of the electric company, as well as other neoliberal policies that he was supposed to implement. Now, Dr. Henry was also implicated in Jovenel Moïse's assassination, as has come to light. His wife also was implicated, but, you know, in Haiti, rumor becomes reality, so we won't touch on that. Now, what happened was Henri, once he, the second thing he was supposed to do was basically organize elections on the island. Haiti hasn't had elections since under Martelly, so there's basically no no Congress, no president, nothing. So he was due to, so two things: continue the neoliberal policies that Jovenel was supposed to continue from Martelly, as well as hold parliamentary and presidential elections on the island. He implemented the complete privatization of the electric company, the complete privatization of the ports, the signing of, you know, the whole identity politics, except homosexuality in Haiti. However, he did not hold elections, and he was in constant conflict with the gangs that are concentrated in the urban ghettos of Haiti. Now, you have two viewpoints concerning the gang. You have the whole Haiti Liberté, Kim Ives position, who looks at the gang under the G9 or G9 gang, led by Jimmy Cherizier, Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, as a revolutionary, a socialist revolutionary movement in which Jimmy is trying to organize the poor to topple the Haitian imperial under the imperial influence, the Haitian state under the imperial influence of the U.S. and the core group. And then on the other side, you have the managerial, the professional managerial class, who looks at the Haitian gangs as vagabond gang members who are dealing drugs, control. They're basically influenced by the Black American underclass. And that's represented by the gang leader's name is Andre Johnson. Johnson Andre, excuse me. He goes by the name of Izo. He's basically, his entourage is basically into drug dealing. He posts rap musics and videos of Haitian Creole rap, basically replicating the Black underclass culture that we find here in America. So these two viewpoints of the gangs, the socialist revolutionary represented by Cherizier, as well as the vagabond, the gangster that we find represented by Izo. So Ariel Henri found himself pitted against Cherizier as well as the other gangs. Now, Cherizier has been sanctioned by the U.S. government as well as the U.N. And partly he claims it's political, given an event that took place under the Martelly administration. That being said, this conflict would be exacerbated because on February 7th, Dr. Henri was supposed to hold elections or resign, and he did neither. Now, to combat the gang situation, Dr. Henri, with the assistance of the core group, America in particular, decided that they were going to go and invite a Kenyan delegation under this missionary police force to assist the Haitian police force to combat the gang situation in Haiti. So after February 7th, Dr. Henri decided he was going to fly because the Kenyan parliament had decided that there was not an agreement between Haiti and Kenya. Therefore, they could not allow the police force to travel to Haiti. So he traveled to Kenya to sign this agreement. And while in Kenya, Jimmy Cherizier decided to unite with some of the more violent drug dealing gangs under the nomenclature Vivensomme. So it was a unification of the gangs under this Vivensomme, in which under this nomenclature Vivensomme, in which they would unite and prevent Dr. Henri from returning to the island and basically gain control over all of the major institutions in Haiti. They attack the prison system in Port-au-Prince. They burned it. They released many of the prisoners. They took over the international airport. And this was their revolutionary moment. Now, there's a third member that comes into this process, and this is Guy Philippe, who in 2004 had fomented a coup against Aristide, and he was implicated in drug dealing and money laundering by the U.S. and was jailed for about 6-7 years and was released last year. Upon his return to the island, he decided he was going to start a revolution in Haiti and topple the Henri government. And he also united with some of the gang members. So you have Jimmy Cherizier, Guy Philippe, who is basically trying to form alliances with some of the grassroots political parties, such as Petite Dessalines under Moïse Jean-Charles. And they got together and decided they were going to topple the Henri government while he was away. Henri tried to return on Monday, and they would not allow him because they took over the Cherizier and Vivensum took over the airport. So he flew into Puerto Rico. CARICOM, the Caribbean community, under the directorship of Guyana, decided to, at the behest of the U.S., decided to call an emergency. Well, this is their annual meeting anyway. To call an emergency meeting on Haiti and discuss the situation in Haiti. They decided that to resolve the current situation in Haiti, that Dr. Henri must resign, and a presidential council of nine members would basically go and govern Haiti in the absence of Dr. Henri. So of the nine member council, seven would be voting members and two represented by civil society and the religious sector would basically be in observing, two observing members of the council. So the groups that were invited to constitute this presidential council, outside of Petite Dessalines, they constituted the group that formed the Montana Accord. The Montana Accord was a group of professional managerial Haitians who representing different political parties who were trying to come up with an accord to transition Haiti from Dr. Henri into elections and have a self-sustaining governance. That being said, the council at the behest of the United States laid down some stipulations for those who are looking to participate in the upcoming elections. Three stipulations were put in place. One, you could not be sanctioned by the UN or have any charges against you. Two, you could not have any criminal record. And three, if you're looking to run for elections, you could not participate in this presidential council. So basically that eliminated Jimmy Cherizier and Guy Philippe. So Vivensum was totally eliminated, and they hold a substantial following. Now, people have to realize the majority of the chaos and the crisis we're witnessing is concentrated in Port-au-Prince. Outside of Port-au-Prince, the island is practically peaceful. So with this large following, now that Henri, his stipulation is the president, he will only resign once the presidential council has been put in place. And the other stipulation regarding the presidential council is that they must accept the mission force, the Kenyan mission force, to assist the Haitian police force in combating the gang issue. So today, many of the gang members replied, Jimmy Cherizier replied and said that CARICOM and this presidential council has no basis, no political authority to dictate who can run for office in Haiti. Guy Philippe, in an interview, made the same comments. Now, the alternative solution that the grassroots community is offering in Haiti, people like Moïse Jean-Charles, who has partnered up with Guy Philippe and is backing Guy Philippe for president of the country. The alternative solution to this presidential council that the U.S. and the imperial powers are putting in place is to have the Haitian Supreme Court, the coup de cassation, basically the leader, the head of the Supreme Court, become president and nominate a prime minister to hold election, similar to what happened under the sister Thuyot after the ouster of Aristide. So these are the two solutions now. You have the presidential council on the one hand, and you have the Haitian grassroots community promoting the Haitian Supreme Court leader as the transitional government to hold elections and transition Haiti to a democratic political, a democratic system. So I'll stop there, Pascal, and answer any questions or.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, you want to jump in with some questions?
Just one question. The chat is talking about Aristide. Mm-hmm. Is Aristide, is that conversation helpful or important right now?
It is because only in the sense that Aristide really hasn't, his political party, although they constitute one of the seven members of the presidential council nominated by the by CARICOM, but Aristide really doesn't get involved in the political process nowadays. His political party is basically under the operation of Dr. Maurice Narcisse. So he really doesn't get involved so much in the political process. His whole focus is on his university. Once in a while, he'll come out with some commentary, but he really is not involved. But his Fumi Lavalas is one of the members of the seven-member presidential council.
Okay, so he is represented, sort of.
His party, yes, sort of. But his party, since his ouster, has moved to center, I'll say center left. He's not as, it's not as radical as it was when he first came out. It's more along the lines of the professional managerial class. They're more inclined to work with the international community. So it's more center left than it is left, but yes, his party is represented.
Okay, just wanted to ask that. Pascal?
So the main question I wanted to ask you, Paul, is that who exactly are financing these gangs? Who has the capacity to finance them? And who is orchestrating their ability to buy weaponry and get guns that would be having to come from the United States, quite frankly?
Oh, absolutely. There's no gun manufacturing plant in Haiti. So, and what you have to understand about politics in Haiti, and this goes back to the divide, this goes back to the revolution. Every political player in Haiti has their own gang, and it's the oligarchy that supports that finance. And you have to understand, I was listening to Ezel give a commentary. He was being interviewed on Haitian television, and he said the following: when they run out of guns, they go to the ports, and basically the Haitian oligarchy gives them guns and to do what they got to do. So most of the gang members, although Ken Maj will exclude Jimmy Cherizier from that, but when you look at some of the guns these brothers are carrying, there's no way these weaponry did not come from the U.S. and other major players in the area, including Canada, France, the Haitian oligarchy. And when you look at Guy Philippe, Moïse Jean-Charles, all of these political leaders, they all have their own entourage and their own gang members that basically supports them and sponsor, or they sponsor through they fund. So, you know, the crisis in Haiti, the gang crisis in Haiti is a socio-political economic crisis. You have poor young men with no other opportunities because most of these NGOs, they focus on women and young girls, and there's nothing for these young brothers to do. And the only solution is guns and drug dealing and rapping and glorifying bling bling when you look at some of the videos that Ezo posts. So it's no different from the same crisis that plagued the American ghettos in the 80s and 90s, brother.
So would you argue that this phenomenon of these, and I heard Jemima Pierre recently say that she would not call them gangs. She would actually call them paramilitary forces because they have much more sophisticated weaponry than simple gang members. And many of them are actually high-ranking police or military officials. That these paramilitary forces go back to the tradition of Haitian politics of when basically rival factions had to support underground militias in order to maintain their territory from Sanglin Do in the 19th century to, I mean,
the Tonton Macoute under Duvalier. And we got to understand, let's be frank. We do have some gangsters. Ezo, I would classify as a gangster. His whole modus operandi is glorifying women, sex, drugs, and the bling bling. And then you do have some paramilitary forces hired by the Haitian oligarchy to protect their interests. And then you have people like Jimmy Cherizier who claim to be fighting a proletarian revolution, and he's got to topple the government and redistribute the wealth amongst the ghettos. So I would say all three, you have three, all three aspects of gangsterism is involved here. So I'm not where Kim Ives is. I'm not celebrating Jimmy Cherizier as this revolutionary leader along the lines of Lenin. I don't see that yet, but you know, many of the gang, Vivant Somme, what he did to topple the Haitian government, him and Guy Philippe, for me that was revolutionary because they took over all of the major institutions in Port-au-Prince and refused to allow Dr. Henri to arrive, although they backed off when the U.S. Marines arrived to protect the American embassy. So the revolutionary movement only goes so far.
Isn't it very possible that this character, Guy Philippe, that we're talking about, who was, you know, pretty much, you know, ex-convict, you know, some would argue a treasonous member who tried to overthrow an elected official when the Aristide administration was in power, that he can be nothing but a puppet agent of the state in terms of being supported or being allowed to rise as a count of agent provocateur or agent provocateur within the context of Haitian society to really facilitate a justified entry of more brutal military forces.
It could be, brother. I won't get into the conspiracy theory. His rhetoric is one thing on the island. I don't know what happened to him in prison, but it's been documented that he was on the CIA payroll and was backed by the CIA to topple the Aristide government. That's one of the revelations of the WikiLeaks reports. The question becomes, did he antagonize the U.S. when he revealed some of this situation prior to him running for Senator of Jérémy, which caused the U.S. to go and basically kidnap him and incarcerate him? Now, I don't know what transformation took place with this brother while he was in prison, but on his return to Haiti, he's talking about this revolutionary movement to topple the government, to confront American imperialism, to confront the core group. That's the rhetoric he's bringing onto the island. Now, should we take that at face value? I'm not sure. He does have a huge following in Port-au-Prince, Outside of Port-au-Prince, he's from the southeast of the country, the southern part of the country. So he has a huge following there. With the backing of Jean-Charles Moïse and P.T. Dessalines, that gives him a foothold in the northern department. And now he's partnered with Jimmy Cherizier in the ghettos and the gangs that constitute Vivre Ensemble. So that makes him a force to reckon with. Now, how will the core group and this presidential council, if it's allowed to take place, how will they deal with Guy Philippe's emerging stardom? That's got to be a new issue, brother. I think there'll be confrontation. I do not believe they'll allow the presidential council to take hold. So this is trying times. I think before it gets better, it's got to get worse.
Can you talk about the role of the Kenyan military and how exactly they've been solicited to come and get involved, as well as some islands like Barbados and others as well?
Well, and one of your chat, there was a question in the chat about where's the Haitian military, where's the Haitian police force? Well, that's the problem. The gang members have military equipment, but the Haitian state, because it has been so neutered under neoliberal policy, that it doesn't have the fund to fund the police, to fund under Jovenel Moïse, there was an attempt to reconstitute the Haitian military, but given the lack of funding by the government, there's not enough money for equipment. So when Dr. Henri gets into was appointed as prime minister, there was an attempt to solicit the U.S. initially and the core group to assist the Haitian police with combating the gang issue in Haiti. So Dr. Henri actually requested that Marines be sent, as well as that Canada send some paramilitary forces in France. But all three refused. So initially, all three said they would not send any forces into Haiti, given that they're dealing with the issue of Ukraine, dealing with the issue of Israel. So the next, the alternative was to get CARICOM to send members to a paramilitary force or some sort of force to assist the Haitian police force. And CARICOM initially, Bahamas agreed, Barbados agreed, Jamaica agreed to constitute a police force, but that fell flat on its face. And the second solution was proposed by Kenya, which, as we all know, is a colonial outpost of the British in the U.S. So they agreed. The United States would foot the bill. Initially, it was $100,000. They recently doubled it to $100 million. They initially doubled it to $300 million to have the Kenyan military quasi special mission to assist the Haitian police to combat some of the gang issue in Haiti. Now, the Kenyan parliament voted against that, and because there was no agreement with Haiti, no political agreements with Haiti. So that took a backseat. And this is why Dr. Henri flew over to Kenya to agree to some sort of political agreement to have this police, this contingency force, sent to Haiti to combat some of the gang issue. But all of this is America and the core group using people of color to promote their neoliberal imperial policies, brother. The same thing they're doing in Rwanda and the Congolese, they're using Rwanda to attack the Congo. So everywhere, what's happening in Haiti, in Kenya, and CARICOM, it's just America using its proxies to basically subdue the Haitian fight for independence.
What do you think kind of commentary do you think that makes about the state of Pan-Africanism in the world that Kenyon can be dispatched that way?
Oh, brother, don't get me started on Pan-Africanism, man. I think in the U.S., Pan-Africanism died with the Black Panther Party and the dismantling of the Black Panther Party under COINTELPRO. On the international scene, as Fanon pointed out, with the appointment of a comprador bourgeoisie to serve as mediator between the former colonial powers and the populace of these emerging independent countries, basically quelled the whole Pan-African movement centered on not only Pan-Africanism, but trying to synthesize Pan-Africanism with socialism. So if you're trying to understand Pan-Africanism today, is basically a form of racial vindicationism synthesized with Black bourgeois capitalism. So you have a comprador Black bourgeois class who racially vindicates itself through its success in Western institutions and while basically subduing their population to basically serve as a lumping proletariat for capitalism and imperialism. So I'll say Haiti, Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger are the only, and Eritrea, of course, are the only African countries trying to promote a Pan-Africanism centered on socialism, a Pan-Africanism that dates back to the revolutionary movement from 1950 to 1970. Outside of that, brother, you have South Africa is a paragon of contemporary Pan-Africanism under neoliberalism. The ANC became a Black bourgeoisie in control of the state and basically neoliberalized the state and used their population as a lumping proletariat for capitalist businesses. And that's what's happening in Haiti today.
Can you explain for our audience? We had a question there. Is that Jason in there? Yeah, that is Jason. What is CARICOM? Can you define CARICOM for our audiences?
CARICOM is the Caribbean community. CARICOM was founded in 1973. It basically consisted of the English Caribbean, the British, and the United States. They were small emerging countries, basically with the same economies. They were agriculturally based economies. And to deal with them, the British, the U.S., suggested that they form a community. It's a political and economic community. And basically they serve, it's what the CARICOM is to the Caribbean, what the European Union is to Europe, essentially. It's an economic, although European Union is not political, it's becoming political, it's more economic, but CARICOM is more economic. It's a 15 member state of all the Caribbean countries, four observant non-Caribbean non-members, but it's basically a political economic organization of Caribbean states.
And what has been their posture traditionally when dealing with Haiti?
Haiti became a full member of CARICOM in 2002. Initially, it wasn't a part of CARICOM. Haiti became the first non-English speaking nation in CARICOM in 2002. And for the most part, their stance on Haiti prior to 2002 was always, this is a Black Republic, stay out, the U.S. stay out. It was an anti-imperialist position towards Haiti, especially under the Jamaica, mostly Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago dominate CARICOM for the most part. And so under Michael Manley, they viewed Haiti as this revolutionary place, and it was anti-imperialism. But since Haiti joined the community, they view Haiti as a pariah state, essentially, and they feel they should manage Haiti under the community. The Haitian populace have an antagonistic view of CARICOM. They view CARICOM as an arm of American and the core group's imperialism, and their behavior since 2002 has been as such. They Jamaica, Bahamas, Barbados, they volunteered their own police force to combat the gang members. And if you know anything about Haitian history, this notion of having any sort of foreign troops on the island is viewed negatively by the Haitian political elites, as well as not necessarily the economic elites, but the political grassroots organizations view that as imperialism.
Can you define more in more specific terms the nature of how Haiti functioning as a Francophone country in an Anglophone Caribbean creates some potential tensions in terms of managing its political affairs?
I don't want to contextualize it as a Francophone operating within an Anglophone community. The issue with Haiti and CARICOM, because of Haiti's poverty and Haiti's lack of political stability, Haiti has never played a major role in CARICOM since joining the community in 2002. Haiti, under the Matéli organization, Matéli was the one, and Laurent Lamothe were the ones who promoted French as the language of trade in CARICOM. But outside of that, Haiti has not played a major role in CARICOM. It's always been viewed antagonistically. And I won't say the antagonism is linguistic. I'll say the antagonism is more cultural, it's more sociocultural and political. And on the one hand, CARICOM, the leaders of CARICOM, because of their Western orientation, they view Haiti as a pariah state, and Haiti views CARICOM as an agent of imperialism. That's where the antagonism is more political economy than it is linguistic and cultural.
So it really lies in the roots of the fact that Haiti as a political economy is not able to muster the GDP that competes with these countries. And as a result, it basically is always, you know, in a position where it's asking for some type of assistance or dealing with the IMF and World Bank and
mostly. Truth be told, CARICOM is not in a position to provide Haiti with any sort of assistance, brother. CARICOM, the members of CARICOM themselves are dependent on the World Bank, the IMF, for their own economies. It's only recently that Jamaica started trading with China, and China is investing in some of the infrastructure in Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaica and Guyana. But outside of that, CARICOM is itself struggling. However, I would say that the antagonism between CARICOM and Haiti is more so political economy. The Haitian, especially the grassroots Haitians, they view CARICOM as an arm of American and Canadian and British and French imperialism. And the members of CARICOM view Haiti as a pariah state, essentially.
Can you talk more about the origins of the core group and their role in the overthrow of Aristide in 2004 and their contemporary role in Haitian affairs as well?
Well, the core group is constituted of the U.S., Canada, France, the U.K. And essentially, they post the fall of Aristide, they basically developed an economic plan, a neoliberal economic plan for Haiti's development. So the whole emphasis was these countries or the friends of Haiti, the plan was to neoliberalize the Haitian state by instituting a two-party political system based on neoliberal policies on the island. So the whole emphasis was on light manufacturing in Haiti, agribusiness, sports and entertainment, and tourism. That was supposed to be the what transitioned Haiti from the poorest country in the Caribbean to a middle-income country. So the whole emphasis was to transition from Taiwan as a place of light manufacturing to Haiti as a place for light manufacturing, manufacturing Major League Baseball manufacturers, their baseballs there, Disney, Levi Jeans and Strauss, they have manufacturing companies. And all of that was to take place under the leadership of these five nations, working with the Haitian oligarchy to implement the privatization of all Haitian state assets, including most of the Haitian state, most of the Haitian state assets were the ports, the electric EDH, which is the electric company in Haiti. And all of that was supposed to be privatized, coupled with light manufacturing, coupled with tourism, coupled with agribusiness to develop Haiti along the lines of Chile and Russia post the fall of the Soviet Union. However, in their attempt to implement all of this, they ran into initially under Preval, who partnered up with, the initial issue was Aristide. Aristide tried to foment a revolutionary movement in Haiti, in which he rallied the poor to rise up against some of the neoliberal policies, which he would in turn adopt the second coup, the first coup when he was returned. He adopted many of the policies. One of the major issues Aristide faced was trying to raise the minimum wage, which Hillary Clinton and the State Department were against. Nonetheless, in their attempt to neoliberalize Haiti, they ran into Preval, they ran into Aristide. And so Michel Martelly, post the earthquake, was able to implement, I'll say, 80%, 75 to 80% of what the core group wanted. He privatized the ports, which Aristide refused to do. People have to realize the ports in Haiti were the major source of income for the Haitian state. And even Aristide realized that, even though he privatized many other state institutions, he refused to privatize the port. So the largest port today is owned by Bigio, Port Lafitte and Port-au-Prince. And basically all the other ports are privatized. So basically, there's no income coming to the Haitian state. The only source of income would be taxation under neoliberal policy. And you can't tax a population that makes absolutely nothing. So the Haitian state is a meager state. And Haiti is a paragon of the neoliberal model. All of its state institutions are privatized. It can't generate enough income from taxation. And so this is what if you look at the revolutionary gang members, if you want to consider Jimmy Chérizier a revolutionary, this is what they're combating. They're combating an ineffective state that is unable to provide medical care, that is unable to provide education for the population because it doesn't have the income to do so. Everything is either in the hands of NGOs, private persons. So basically, you have a failed state, essentially, in Haiti.
Yes, these privatizations, you said something that was very important, that Haiti is the apotheosis of neoliberalism, in that, you know, it basically is neoliberalism on steroids.
Yes.
And what is one of the things that's frustrating to me is that, why is it there's never any analysis of political economy and the role of foreign intervention in terms of Haitian political economy and how Haiti gets into this crisis. In other words, how the role of what's that political economy in bringing things to this position.
The problem that we have, especially in Haitian academia, is the fact that many academics want to focus on race as the underlying issue that is impacting Haiti's relationship with its former colonial master, France, the U.S., and the Canada, and the rest of the core groups. But in doing so, we fail to take into account the role that the Haitian oligarchy, the role that the Haitian professional managerial class has played in undermining Haitian sovereignty and undermining Haitian independence. Just like post the Haitian Revolution, it is the elites who requested that the U.S. come and occupy Haiti. It is Pétion who came up with the notion to pay the debt to France. But and when we're dealing with that, there's a level of intellectual dishonesty in which we, for the reason of racial vindicationism, but there's this unwillingness to take into account the complicity that the Haitian managerial class, as well as the Haitian elites, have played in undermining Haitian sovereignty. So it's easy to say, oh, it's because Haiti was the first Black Republic. We're paying for our revolution, and somehow that makes us feel good. But at the same time, in doing so, we negate the fact that the Haitian elites, the Haitian oligarchy, are playing a major role in undermining Haitian sovereignty. And there's a dishonesty in Haitian intellectual circle in our unwillingness to deal with the political economic structure that is in place that allowed, because remember, yes, I'm saying that the Haitian oligarchy, I'm saying the professional managerial class, they're undermining Haitian independence, but there's an economic interest involved as to why they're undermining a Haitian sovereignty. Because at the end of the day, as Jean-Charles Moïse and Jimmy Cherizier, everybody gets paid in Haiti. If people couldn't make money in Haiti, Haiti would be left alone, brother. So there's an economic interest involved in which the elites, it is in their best interest to undermine Haitian sovereignty so that they can make money, essentially. So this whole notion of just focusing on race and this notion that it's because Haiti was the first Black Republic, blah, 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 that undermines some of the complicity that the Haitian elites have played in undermining Haitian sovereignty.
Someone asked a question, I believe it was Jason, what is the role of this has in the Haitian brain drain? Is Haiti suffering a brain drain because of these consequences?
Well, it goes back to, in academia and economics, we have this push-pull effect, which leads to the brain drain in any of where you find this displacement of traditionalism and nationalism in some of these countries and the implementation of capitalist relations of production. And if you look at Haiti, the problem is, and the brilliance, and I know Pascal is a big fan of Dessalines, the brilliance of Dessalines is that he nationalized the land, and what caused his assassination was the attempt to basically redistribute the land, which is why in all communist nations, the nationalization of corporations and the redistribution of wealth is the biggest attack on capitalism. So what happens in Haiti is the fact that post the revolution, the majority of the Haitian peasantry, they were able to own their own land, farm their own private plots, etc. But when you open up your markets to competition with agribusinesses, the Haitian peasantry is unable to compete. They leave the land, move to the city, and this is the push-pull effect that's happening here. They move to the capital city looking for work in light manufacturing plants that the U.S. and the core groups, along with the oligarchy, implement in the capital city. And they're basically hiring women. That leaves the young, because as we know in economics, women are more pliable workers than men. They're willing to go along with the low, meager wages that these manufacturing plants are paying. So now that leaves the men without jobs, nothing to do but foment revolution. The rise of gangsterism: when you're not working and you can't feed your family, you turn to illegal activities. Those who are unable to find work in the city, they then look to come to the core nations. And this push-pull effect is, we're witnessing this push-pull effect in Haiti. And then when you have these Haitians come to the diaspora in Canada and the U.S., they undergo what I call the African-Americanization of the Haitian diaspora, the my niggerization of the Haitian diaspora. You have a bunch of young Haitians who adopt the underclass culture of American society. You have a black bourgeois Haitian class. When they immigrate to the U.S., they fall into the bourgeois class structure of America. It's about self-interest. So this notion to return to Haiti really is outside of their mind. They become, look at Wyclef Jean. Wyclef basically has been adopted into the African-American class structure. He knows very little about Haiti. And as many of you may know, the U.S. tried to use, before Martelly, Wyclef was on the short list to be president of Haiti. He barely can speak Creole. He doesn't know the country. And as he is a paragon of the Haitian diaspora. Once they arrive here in the U.S. looking for work, they get socialized into the class structure of the African-American class structure, and they're only looking to go to Haiti for vacation, tourism, and because the island is unsafe, there's not this return back to Haiti, and you have this brain drain that is basically, and I don't like to use brain drain, because that implies that those who are left behind are unable to resolve Haiti's issue, which isn't the case. The majority of the political elites in Haiti have dual citizenship. They're either in Canada, or their families are in Canada, their families are in the U.S. It's just a sad situation, an overall sad situation.
What do you think actually will be necessary to change the changing tides of what's going on in Haiti?
Ooh, brother, I don't want to have you all taken off the air, but for me, somehow the Haitian grassroots have to remove itself from the auspices of the core group, either through partnering with China, Russia, but they have to get themselves from under the umbrella of the core group. They have to fight the Haitian oligarchy. There's no compromise. There should not be any compromise. This multipolar order that China, Iran, the BRICS nations are trying to put in place is Haiti's only solution. So long as Haiti stays under the umbrella of the core group, we're going to have the same issue, brother. I don't see, no. Multipolarity is the saving grace for Haiti.
I'm still not... I'm still not sold, man. I don't think that trying to reshuffle the deck where we have a new capitalist paymaster necessarily guarantees a better quality of life for the planet.
All I agree.
you know.
I don't view what's happening now with the BRICS nation as an overthrow of capitalism. I think it's a return to a sort of 1950s, 1960s Keynesian model for all of the nations who decide to trade with China, Russia, et cetera. So that still leaves the threat that capitalist relations of production has on the environment, of course, pollution, climate change, et cetera. But at least there will be an alternative. At least there's alternative source of funding. Look at what the work that China is doing in Jamaica in terms of building Jamaica's infrastructure. Haiti, under a unipolar world, Pascal, there's no alternative. It's either the IMF, World Bank, or we invade your country. But at least with Russia and China, there's an alternative source of funding to rebuild Haiti's infrastructure. And Haiti's infrastructure needs rebuilding, brother. There's no infrastructure to speak about. So at least there are alternatives out there. Now, they're not the saving grace, but it beats getting beat up the head every 3, 4, 5 years by the core group in American imperialism.
Toussaint, are you out there? Do you have any questions?
Hello. There were some questions in the chat about sweatshops. Oh, are there sweatshops in Haiti?
Well, that's what these light manufacturing plants are. Levi Jeans, Major League Baseball, Disney, all of them, they have sweatshops. And that's what got Aristide in trouble, trying to raise the minimum wage. Of course, Hillary Clinton was against that. He raised it to a dollar after... It was from 25 cents to a dollar. Could you imagine that? 25 cents a day? That's insane, man. But you know, and this is why some academics will argue that why is America so invested in Haiti? That's a very important question. Why is Haiti so important? You have scholars who want to point out the fact that, well, it's a reserve labor force to supplant the Taiwanese, the Chinese. So American capitalism needs a cheap labor force. So the Haitian masses will serve as the Haitian female masses will serve as a lumping proletariat for capitalist relations of production. The other argument is that Haiti is sitting on reserves of gold, oil, and other resources required for American post-industrial industries. And the third factor is the fact that, you know, since independence, the American state has been after there's a small island, La Tortie, which is on the northern coast of Haiti, and that serves as a direct route to international trade in Africa and the Middle East. So until we figure out what exactly America wants in Haiti, the only solution is Haiti getting from under the umbrella of the core group. Until that happens, Haiti will continue to be in the same situation year in and year out.
So doom and gloom, brother. So doom and gloom.
Brother, man, we've been fighting this fight since 1804.
Yep.
Since 1804. I don't see a break between the revolutionary period and what we're experiencing today, man. Haiti has been fighting the same fight.
We have any questions in the chat? Any super chats? Wow, that was a fast hour, brother.
It's been an hour already, man.
It has been. Well, let me ask this one question. Mm-hmm. Do you see any good news anywhere? Anything that looks bright or promising besides BRICS?
I think the ass kicking that Russia is giving Ukraine is promising. I think the turn against Israel is promising. And I think, I think what's happening in Haiti is promising, to be honest with you. I really do. I think these brothers preventing Ariel Henry from returning to the island is a step forward, because I don't think Ariel Henry was going to hold elections anytime soon. So I think this is promising. I know it's very gloomy right now, but there's some promising events happening. And I think those three events, what's happening in Haiti, the Ukraine affair, what's happening in Palestine, as gloom as it is, these are revolutionary moments that we need to capture and take advantage of and displace American imperialism.
What is the situation in Haiti Central Highlands?
Oh, you're talking about the bridge, not the bridge, the canal.
Oh. Well, that hasn't stopped. You know, it's still going on.
There's a canal.
They're almost done building the canal. Basically, the Dominican Republic backed off. They backed off. So that's been quiet. Outside of Port-au-Prince, it's safe. My family flies into Cap Haïtien every year, no issues. And I have young family. Full disclosure, my family has a parish still in Ocap, in which from June 1st to June 30th, they hold a voodoo ceremony and honor the ancestors. And younger members of my family fly in, no problems. Port-au-Prince is the issue. It's the main fighting ground.
As Sulu used to call it, Port-au-Crime, land of crime, because that's
land of crime.
That's where they assassinated this league.
All right. I feel like this is the best we've gotten out of you. This is you. You topped yourself. This has been a great show.
I'm with Pascal. Sometimes you want to get down, but when you really look at, I try to synthesize theory and praxis. So when you really look at it theoretically, you see this moment is pregnant with revolution, man. I think something good can come out of this. What we're witnessing on a global scale, I think something good will come out.
Well,
hang on. You've been publishing. I don't want you to forget. Go ahead. Talk to us about that.
Oh, I have I have a new book out called Black Assimilationism and Neoliberal Globalization. This is with my co-author, Dr. Carol Tomlin and Erickson Mapfume. I have another one out on consciousness and the physics of consciousness. And I have one coming out on Haitian socialism, tracing the origins of Haitian socialism from Dessalines to contemporary times.
Okay, real quick, we do have a super chat question for you.
Mm-hmm.
What about the hoes?
What about the hoes?
Are these hoes loyal?
In Haiti? Don't get scammed through Facebook. You know, you have women asking you to pay for their nursing program. So look out for, back in the days, you used to have to look out for emails and text messages from Nigeria. Now you have to look out for text messages and emails from Haitian women. I had one send me a message asking me to pay for her nursing school.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Hey. She didn't know who she was dealing with.
Yeah, but hey, that's what it is.
Keep all that milkshake in the yard.
Yeah, all of it.
Pascal.
I'm happy to have my man Paul McComb on the show. We gotta have you on again.
Anytime, brother. Anytime, man.
Yes. Listen,
I know it's Ramadan for you, right, brother?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I'm taking medication though, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So this has been a wonderful episode of This Is Revolution, where we talk about Haiti and crisis. I'd like to thank my co-host, M. Toussaint, fellow Haitian American, for providing support to this episode. And we'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Paul C. McComb of the McCombian Foundation, for coming on and providing the analysis. Look forward to seeing Jason come on this Saturday to fill us in on This Is Revolution podcast. And on that note, we are out. All right.